Okay, this quarter we start a new topic on worship. And certainly there'll be no comments on music and worship on this quarter, I would imagine. But there might be a lesson on it. But today I want to look at three things. I want to look at what happened in the Garden of Eden with the two trees. I want to look at the story of Cain and Abel. And if we have time, which I don't think we will, but if we do, we're going to look at Abraham. Now, what these three have to do with worship is kind of a stretch, so just leave worship out of it. Those are the three things we're going to look at this morning. Okay, first of all, I need a designated reader. Does anybody here have a clear word Bible sitting on the back row between two nice-looking women that would like to read this morning? Way to go, Ron! You know, that's what I appreciate about Ron. He always volunteers. Genesis 4. Just hold on to it till we get there. Okay. In the Garden of Eden, there's two trees. The tree of main trees. Tree of life, tree of good knowledge and evil. Why the two trees? God put them there. Why? One you can eat, one you cannot. That's right. Why? Pardon? I got a test. What was over here?
Choice.
I got a choice.
Freedom.
Who said freedom?
Freedom.
Freedom. It's okay. I got a test. I got a choice. And I got freedom. Which one? One of y'all want to tackle? Which one of those three you want to look at first?
Choice.
Choice. Which one you want to look at next?
Test.
Who said test? All right. We'll look at test first then. You'll get a new meaning of the word democratic. There's nothing democratic about this class. Let's look at a test. What does the word test mean normally to you? Who said pass or fail? That's about basically what it's all about. So we have God creating Adam and Eve. Puts them in a very beautiful garden. They have everything that they want. And he tells them, enjoy. I've created it for you. Enjoy. However, there's one tree that I would advise you not to go near. Now, for the people that said test, and I always appreciate people that answer questions because that's the only way we learn. What's your concept of what test God had? Is it, I've got these nice two people that I've just created. They're perfect. They love me. I love them. But I have to really test them to make sure that they love me. So I'm going to put a tree over here that they can't go to, and if they really, really love me, they won't go. But if they don't love me, then they're going to go to that tree. Is that correct?
No.
Why not? Yes. You don't have to raise your hand in this fight.
Okay.
Better speak quick.
I think God is testing their obedience. Their obedience and
okay.
Their
choice,
actually.
Okay. So let me, you know, I always paraphrase, so if I'm wrong, tell me. So God needed to really test them to see if they loved Him or not.
No.
No?
Obey.
Oh, he needed something to make sure that they would obey.
No.
To follow directions.
Okay. He needed something to make sure they followed directions.
No.
Okay. Now, how many of y'all have had children? Raise your hand high. Did you want your children to love you?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Did you want them to obey you?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Where did my mom and dad go wrong? Did you want them to follow directions?
Yes.
Surely. Okay. Now, when they were 4 years old, what test did you create to make sure that they loved you, that they would obey you, and they would follow you? Who would like to share that test that you created?
The observation of a belt.
Pardon?
The observation of a belt.
It worked.
As I was saying, by the way, I believe in corporal punishment, so I don't have any problems with that.
Well,
yes.
The test that we put out for our children long before four is, do you believe that I love you? Because all through their teenage years, they're questioning, do you really love me? Do you love me enough to put those boundaries in place? Do you love me enough that you're going to take? And so, yes, we, you know, it's a test, but it's not the test that we think of.
Well, you know, I preach. But my question is, what artificial test did you create when your children were young so that you could find out if they loved you, if they were going to obey you, and if they were going to follow directions? What test?
No, there is none.
What?
We have had a test.
What?
The test is that we built a foundation of love.
No, I said, what artificial test did you create? What? Yes.
Something like, in cooking, don't touch the hot stove. I mean, isn't that kind of like a test where you're giving them the option?
Okay.
You know,
okay. No, I understand your thinking. What kind of test did you artificially create? Because see, what you're saying for the test people is God created two trees and He wanted to test. Am I correct? All right, so what test did you create to see if your children loved you or not?
I personally did not create a test. Their love came as a result, or they showed their love as a result of what they did.
Okay.
Or by, let's say, how they acted, or they responded to us as parents. Okay. That's basically a test rather than saying, do not touch this or do not touch that.
Okay.
Because those are not really tests of whether an individual loves you or not.
Okay, very good. Like that answer. Anybody else?
He didn't want us to be robots, so therefore we had the choice of...
Okay.
Okay.
So we do not want our children to be robots. So what test do we create to make sure they're not a robot?
Let them run, stumble, and fall, back up again.
Okay, absolutely. That's the only way they learn. Okay. All right. How many of y'all brushed your teeth this morning? Who didn't? So I know where to, you know, kind of rearrange some of the seat. All right. Why? Now, when I was two or three or whatever age, my mother made me go in every morning and do what? Brush my teeth. Why?
So we wouldn't scare the other kids.
Pardon?
So we wouldn't scare the other kids.
Okay, that's one of them. For your health. Who was it good for? My folks for me to brush my teeth or me to brush my teeth? Okay. Is that a test of how much I loved or did not love them?
No.
No. That's because they cared. Now, I happen to brush my teeth this morning. What do you think my motivation was? To satisfy my mother? Or does it just make good sense? Okay. Keep that in mind. Now, did sin arrive in heaven faith?
Yes.
Good. Okay. What was the test in heaven? Pardon? There was no test. Look, when God deals, He deals the same as yesterday, today, and tomorrow. There's a common thread that runs through the character of God. He never changes. There was no test in heaven. There was no tree of good tree, bad tree in heaven. There was no need of a test. But yet sin still found itself in Satan's heart, and he dwelt on it till he became consumed by it and was no longer in heaven by his own choice. There was no test. God needed no test in heaven. Now, why would we come then and say in the Garden of Eden, He had to create two trees, one good, one bad, because He had to test to see if we were going to be obedient. He had to test to see if we were going to follow directions. He had to test to see what we were going to do. We don't even do that with our own children, except for Charles. Now, Charles, the other day, you like Zachary, don't you?
Yeah.
See? So, he was going to test Zachary's. Does Zachary love you?
Yes.
Okay. He was going to test Zachary to see how much he loved him. So, he dropped him off on I-30. And said, "Now, if you love me, you'll really stand here and you won't try to run across the freeway." And then he went over to the other side of the freeway and said, Zachary, come on over. What do we do with somebody like that? Throw him in the nut house. You going to throw God in the nut house? The tree was put there of good, of knowledge and evil for one reason. And only one reason. Who had access to that tree? The only place he had access. Our God is a fair and loving and caring God, but He does respect our individual choice. He does respect the path that we want to go to. Satan's very argument in heaven was that God was arbitrary, didn't care, and wanted His own way. And so when God created the Garden of Eden, because He is who He is, His character can be no different. He said, "You can have everything in this garden that you want, it's yours. But I've got a tree over here where I've given the adversary access, and in that tree he has the right to proclaim any message that he wants. My advice is don't go over there." You see, your understanding of God is how does He deal with people who sin? If this was an arbitrary test, well, I've just got to see if Adam and Eve really, really love me. We don't even do that to our own children. We don't do that to our wife or husband. Well, I just got to really run a test. Then why would we ascribe that to our Father in heaven? But He is a fair God. And lo and behold, one day Eve wanders off. And she comes to the tree. And she's captivated. And then she goes tells her husband. Eve was deceived. Adam was not. Adam knew what he was doing. Our Father is always the same. Do you think that He sets traps in your life just to see if you'll obey Him or not? He says in Jeremiah, I knew you before you was even born. I knew you when you were in your mother's belly. David says, you know my thoughts before I even speak them. So why would God have to have a test to see if somebody loves Him? He knows the heart. He knows the end from the beginning. But He is who He is. And He always respects freedom very much. So please keep that in mind, and let's move to now the story of Cain and Abel.
I have a question before we move on.
Absolutely.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. But you know in Genesis 2, where it says that God commanded man and told him that he could eat of everything in the garden except for that tree. Because if he did, he'd surely die. Mm-hmm. I know we're saying that he didn't give any specific text. And I did not realize that Satan was just confined to that one tree, even though I probably read it somewhere. I still think there's something to do with obedience in this.
Oh, and okay, let's look at that real quick. Obedience on whose part? For whose sake?
Their sake.
Thank you. There's your answer. Wasn't for God's sake.
No.
For their sake. Because what? No, it's not. What happened when they wandered to the tree? Bad things. What happened when Ethan ran across I-30 at 12 o'clock? Bad things. God was telling them, enjoy everything. Don't go over there. Not as a test. As a fact. He's over there. Don't go. Not an arbitrary test, not an arbitrary command, not an arbitrary, I'm going to kill you if you do. It's, you got everything in the world you want. It's beautiful. I pronounce it as good. Just don't go over there. There's no need. Now let's move to Cain and Abel. What was Abel? His profession? Pardon?
Shepherd.
What was Cain?
Farmer.
What were they supposed to bring in their worship service to God? A lamb. Now, let's look from Cain's mindset. He worked with fruits and vegetables all day long. From all account, he liked it. Probably the first side of insanity to like working in a garden with fruits and vegetables. Mill, who knows me, knows what that means. Who got paid well to come and do my garden one day? Yeah, wife says I want a garden. I said, okay. Randy! So, he grows fruits and vegetables. Do you think he liked his fruits and vegetables? Think he enjoyed them? Think he walked around and said, oh man, look at that peach. Look at that tomato. Only good tomato I've ever seen is what Leroy used to grow. Homegrown tomatoes. Look at that tomato. So one day, he says, you know, this whole system is just kind of a little wacky. I work with these fruits and vegetables. I love them. I've grown some of the best produce around. I don't know what he compared it to, but it was the best produce around. So he decides that he's going to go and take his offering today in the thing he loved the best, fruits and vegetables. on the outside looking in, doesn't that kind of halfway make sense?
If God hadn't specified something.
No, I said on the outside looking in, doesn't that kind of halfway make sense? You see, if I made shoes, was a cobbler, which it means more if I went and sacrificed a pair of shoes that I made, or if I went and bought a little lamb. Man, they're digging at the bottom today for money, aren't they?
I'm going
to shut y'all there. Oops. Go back and apologize immediately. See? Wouldn't it make sense that if I presented a gift that I had worked 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day, would be a little bit better of type of a gift personally than to go and take a few shekels and buy a lamb from somebody and go offer it? You see that thinking? I mean, let's look at that. That's not really far out. However, we got to come to a conclusion in 20 minutes. So, all right. Let's start with Genesis 4 and let's look at the story as it proceeds. Very important to understand the order of the story. Genesis 4:1.
Soon thereafter, Adam lay with his wife, and Eve conceived and gave birth to a son they called Cain. And she said to herself, I've given birth to a man. Maybe he is the one who will break the power of sin and death. The next child was also a boy, and they called him Abel. Abel grew up to be a shepherd, while Cain grew up to be a farmer. As they worshipped week by week, Cain brought the fruits of the field as an offering to the Lord, symbolic of his own labor and as a favor done to God. He refused to ask his brother for a lamb and mingle his blood with his offering, as the Lord had told him to do.
Okay, so I stop there. Now, very important part. How long have the sacrifices been going on? Pardon? For a while. Very important part of the story. So when Cain brought his fruits and vegetables, this wasn't the first time around. Had been going on for a while. Now, why was it important that a lamb be slain and the blood being used as part of the sacrifice? Is that God just being arbitrary? Could he have said, I want a lamb, I want an orange, I want a kangaroo? Why a lamb? And why blood? Okay.
Go back to the purpose of the sacrifice.
All right. What is that purpose?
I just asked a question.
Oh, okay. Leroy wants to know what was the purpose of the sacrifice. Certainly, there's a symbolism there. What else? There is one thing we're missing. Pardon? Okay, I'm not a big follower of God says it and I got to do it, though I believe that. I believe that God says things and we need to understand why He says them.
Well, what was the first sacrifice?
What was the first sacrifice?
Adam and Eve's clothes.
Okay.
God made them.
That's right. Trent.
Well, I was going to say one is basically a sacrifice of works, like Jane.
Okay, absolutely, we're still on the lamb.
Yeah.
Little ahead of us. Yes?
I think God wanted to show the results of sin, the death of the lamb.
Oh, okay. What's the meaning of death? How do you explain death when there is no death?
It was about our acceptance of God as our Savior.
Yes, absolutely. And it is also, what do you think went through their mind, Adam and Cain and Abel, went through their mind when they took that innocent little lamb, they slit its throat, poured out some of the blood, cut off some of the flesh. What do you think went through their mind every time they did that?
The consequence of their action.
Absolutely. You see, interesting thing. I guess it's interesting. When I was in the ninth grade, it struck me as interesting. In languages where there's no word for stuttering, guess what there isn't?
Stuttering.
Now, I don't know what that means, except in languages where there's no word for stuttering, there's no stuttering. In languages where there's no death, it's kind of hard to explain what death is. So you had them, because of the consequences of what they did, having to sacrifice a lamb, not to appease God, not to test God. God says, well, let's see what you got today. Simply as a reminder that when you wander away from God, what happens in your life? Bad things. And the ultimate is death. Now here's Cain going along with the ritual, and one day he decides, this stinks. Continue.
Verse 4. Abel brought a lamb to the Lord, and God accepted Abel's offering because it pointed forward to the one who would give his life for man. Abel saw the importance of obedience, so he did what God had told him to do. But Cain's offering was not acceptable to God because he did not follow God's instructions, believing that his willingness was all that mattered. When Cain realized...
Let's stop there for a second. Now, what's Cain's thinking?
He's thinking, I'm giving the best of my labor. I'm giving the best that I produced.
And what's wrong with that?
It's all about him.
Absolutely.
He made the decision to do what he did.
By the way, what was the sin in heaven?
Pride.
It's all about self.
My way. Only I know what's better. Satan's problem in heaven, God's unfair, he's withholding, I have a better way. Cain's problem, God's unfair, he's withholding, I have a better way. And when a person feels that way, they are absolutely in danger of separating themselves from God if they continue to go down that path. And that's all of a sudden the red flag that God has to deal with it. Now, let me show you the character of your father, how much he cares, and what he does. Do you get the picture? Here's a good son, Abel, who does, out of his heart, follow the obedience of God and says, this is what you want. I'm trying to understand it. Here's a lamb. Here's a person that says, only I know what's best for me. I'm going to give these fruits and vegetables. It makes more sense. I've worked harder. Do you see the word is I? Now, watch how God deals with this. Continue, next verse.
But Cain's offering was not acceptable to God because he did not follow God's instructions, believing that his willingness was all that mattered. When Cain realized that God was not pleased with his offering...
All right, now do you get the picture? Cain realizes that he hasn't done right, that God is not happy with this offering. Okay.
Cain realized that God was not pleased with his offering, though he was with his brothers. He not only became upset with God, but blamed his brother for it. As time went on...
All right, let's stop there. Do you get the picture? This is what God deals with when we want to play with sin. He realizes what he's brought is wrong. Now, who's he unhappy with?
His brother.
Everybody
Who's the first one he's unhappy with? God. Your fault. What's the second thing he's unhappy with? His brother. You goody-goody two-shoes. Your fault. Who's left out of the equation? That's the problem with sin. Same sin in heaven. Same sin, by the way, in the Garden of Eden. You see? Well, God, you put the tree there. Adam, well, you gave me the woman. You see, sin follows a logic pattern. It never changes. I tell my salespeople, once you get the story down, it never changes. Did he have a little tear? The story never changes. God needed no test in heaven because sin rose up in the heart of Lucifer and he said, I have a better way. With Eve, she says, you planted the tree, not my fault. Adam says, you gave me the woman, not my fault. Cain says, you made the stupid rules, not my fault. And look at my dumb brother. Now, does God have the right to really, really, really be unhappy? Look what he does.
As time went on, he became more and more angry. So God.
By the way, was there an immediate result? No. Cain's getting mad. Cain's thinking it through. He's looking at all the options and he's getting mad. He's getting upset. This ain't fair.
So God said to Cain, why are you so angry? And why is your face so distorted?
Alright. By the way, remember when God used to come in the evening in the Garden of... 8 minutes. God came in the evening in the Garden of Eden. How did Adam and Eve love His voice? And then one day, they sinned. And God came in the cool of the evening, as He always did. And He had the same melodic voice, the same voice with love, and said, Adam, Eve, where are you? Now, did He know where they were? Well, certainly. Same voice. It was they who were hiding. God uses Hebrew the same tone of voice as He did originally in the Garden of Eden when He came and said, how are y'all doing this evening? Isn't this a beautiful place? And they sat and they talked and they fellowshipped. They loved that voice. Same voice used here. He comes to Cain and he says, Cain, why are you angry? Why is your face so distorted? You're so unhappy. You're so angry. Why? Did he know the answer?
Yes.
Yes. An opportunity for Cain to say what the Father wants to hear is, I've made a mistake. Yes, my son, you have. Come on over here and let me hug you. And let's talk about it. If you don't believe that's true, go to Luke 15, read the story of how the father with the prodigal. So what's Cain's response? Cain, what's wrong? You're so mad. You're so unhappy. Look at what your actions have done to yourself. What does Cain say?
God is speaking to Cain and says, if you had done what you had been told, wouldn't your offering have been accepted? But if you insist on doing things your way, you open the door for sin to control you.
Alright, do you get that point? If you continue to go down the path you're going on, which is going to lead of sin, it will control you. And what are the wages of sin?
Death.
death, not the first death, eternal death. That's the death that God is worried about. If you die, He can resurrect you. If you die in Him, He will resurrect you. He's not worried about the first death. It's the second, the eternal death. If Cain, if you continue to go down this path, it will lead to death. Is that a threat?
No.
No, he's pleading. This is your God. He's pleading with his wayward son, Cain. Cain's reaction.
But if you insist on doing things your way, you open the door for sin to control you. And here's a key statement. With my help, you could master it. Cain didn't listen to God's counsel, but asked his brother to meet him in the field. When they met, he turned on Abel and killed him. Then God spoke to Cain again. Cain, where is your brother?
All right, now. God says, you ever been there? God ever come to you in any form and said, you know, the path you're going down isn't a good one. And if you continue to go down that path, it's going to control you. But with my help, we go down this path. We're going to spend eternity together. What a great appeal. And Cain takes it, and he goes out. We don't know what happened in that field, but we do know what happened when sin controls you, and he rose up and he killed his brother. Now, God really has a reason to be unhappy now. Well, let's see what happens.
So God spoke to Cain again. Where is your brother?
By the way, same melodic voice.
Cain answered, how should I know? Am I my brother's babysitter?
Do you see what sin does? When confronted, still lie. Still make excuses. Not my fault. Not my fault. Well, how am I supposed to know? I'm not a babysitter.
God said, what have you done to your brother? His blood is crying out to me from where you killed him in the field. What you have done will be both a curse to you and to the soil which soaked up your brother's blood. From now on, the soil which was so responsive to you will not be as fruitful as it once was because I have cut back its power to produce. As a result of your rashness, none of your family will ever fully trust you again.
By the way, is that a threat?
No,
it's a fact. You just killed your brother. Want to invite him over for a sleepover in your house? Got to wrap it up. I got 3 minutes.
Okay, we'll wrap it up. Down to verse 13 says, then Cain answered, this isn't fair. The punishment is all out of proportion to what I've done. From now on, there will be no place I can really call my own and where I can feel at home. I feel like running away. If no one will feel safe with me anymore, how can I feel safe with them?
All right, let's stop here. Do you get the picture now? What was the first words he said? Not fair. Not fair. What do you do with a person that just says it's not fair? You give them the facts. You give them what's going on. You point out very kindly. You point out very loving. And they look at it and say, well, this isn't fair. You ever hear that from your grandkids? Oh, this isn't fair. I have no job. I don't make one. Blah, blah, blah. See. So God says, nobody can trust. Cain says, nobody can trust me. I've got to get out here. And when I get out and they hear, they're going to kill me. Here's the character of your father.
God spoke mercifully to Cain. If anyone kills you, the consequences will be 7 times worse for him than for you. And I will make sure that everyone knows this. Then God put a mark on Cain to protect him and to keep him from being killed.
Wow. Why?
Because he still loved him.
still loved him. That's your God. Still loved him. Protected him. Put a mark. 2 days ago, 3 days ago, there was a 22-year-old man driving out by Sweetwater at 3 o'clock in the morning, tossed his 4-year-old son out on the highway and left him. And 3 hours later, he was picked up by a coach that took the boy to the hospital, 4 years old, and they pulled out over 500 cactus spine in his body. Now, how would you like to be the person that can find the punishment for that 22-year-old father? But you see, God looked at Cain and said, you're going to suffer the consequences of your own action. But I'm going to preserve your life for one reason. Maybe you'll have a change of heart. That's love. That's love. By the way, did Cain change? Absolutely not. But in the great judgment day, Revelation, Cain himself will kneel down and say, you are just, you are holy. Because he knows God did everything in his power to save him. Father in heaven, you're a great God. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you all.